Welcome to episode 44 of Speak Beastie for August 27, 2017. I'm Ariel.
I'm Michael.
And I'm Megan.
Here we are.
Together.
Here we are.
Am.
Or ma'am, if you rearrange it.
Ma'am. Or ma.
How's everybody doing?
Ooh.
They really need to just release the next Fantastic Beasts movie, you guys. Because.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about how we're doing, Megan. Who cares? There's no Fantastic Beast anything going on.
How do you know?
Because there's just. It's the sea is dry.
Did you even see the Phoenix Register? Like, I've got things in there this time.
I feel like I've heard all this news before.
Well, probably, but not like on Speak Beastie.
That's true. It's a first for us.
Yeah.
Listen, I could talk about this movie for the rest of my life and be happy about it. So.
Wow.
I could if I watched it again, which I should do.
Yeah.
I feel there's a wealth of bonus features on that fancy pants Target edition that I bought, and I haven't even watched the actual movie.
I haven't even bought the actual movie.
You're a bad fan.
Oh my goodness.
I'm a broke fan is what I am.
Ooh. I'm pretty sure that I have argued against fan shaming on this podcast
before.
And I'm now contradicting
and then, yeah,
myself.
Go and do it.
You can't get that Target Poor edition shame. No more. It's gone.
I know. Maybe on eBay for $600.
Oh, yeah, God. Or you could just, you know what? You could just wait until the whole series is done. And Mina Lima does some kind of weird fancy. I bet you they're going to release it and it's going to be like in the shape of Newt's suitcase and it'll open up and there'll be like little trays pop out and everything. Yeah, I see this.
I'm excited for that.
I see this clearly in my head.
You need to get on that, Mina Lima.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure they're listening. They already have. Yeah. I'm sure they've already designed the box set for all of the movies when they come out.
Well, J.K. Rowling listens, you know, so.
Yes, she does. Do you think they'll super box them and put like Harry Potter and Fantastic Beasts in one big package together?
Absolutely.
That's ridiculous. Man. That's going to cost so much money.
They could charge like $200 for that. They are totally going to do it.
Oh my God, they're going to charge way more than $200.
Yeah. Oh, Megan.
And you can tell that I don't buy these things.
They can charge like $200. That makes me think of
I paid like $15 for each copy of the movies that I have.
That means
so you add it up.
Inflation.
You know.
Plus special features, plus all kinds of fancy little extra trinkets that they're probably going to stick in there. That's going to be expensive.
So I'm really excited that I get to see you two in a week. Well, when this episode comes out, it'll be less than a week.
Yay!
Which is really exciting.
Oh my God!
But like, where are we seeing each other again?
I don't know.
What is that thing called?
I don't even remember.
It's
anymore.
Some event that Michael has never heard of and isn't excited about. I don't
know.
Yeah.
Not at all.
He says, ooh, that's fine.
Muggle Net Live! Or as Allison said it on the last Aloha More episode, Muggle Net Live!
Why are there so many lost episodes of things?
Oh no, it was not lost. Last. Wow.
Oh, okay. Oh.
I must not be enunciating very well tonight.
No, I heard no. last. I don't know. I think Ariel needs to clean her ears or something.
I've had that done before. I could need it again.
But yes.
I'll clean my ears before MuggleNet Live so that way I can hear all the exciting things happening.
Yes, yay. She's not good. Yeah, she'll mishear everything. She won't know what's going on.
Yeah.
But there's lots going on.
There's lots so going much. On.
And there's gonna be lots going on for people who listen to Speak Beastie who may want to hang out with the MuggleNet staff, which includes a lot of us.
No.
If you'd like. What?
I just went, ah.
Oh, I thought that was like a scared noise, not like a noise. I was like, the people want to meet you, Michael. Get over it. So the meetup information on Saturday, September 2nd, the Orlando Eye is giving all attendees of MuggleNet Live BOGO admission, which is a really, really good deal. Everyone from MuggleNet will be there around 9 p.m. So if you want to come hang out with people from Speak Beastie, people from Alohomora, people just doing awesome things on the site whose voices you can't hear, they will also be there. So,
yo, definitely for reals, a lot though.
Of awesome people in that group. So,
oh, yes.
You should totally come hang out with us.
This is totes the first yes. time I'm hearing about this. No one invited well, me.
Michael you're won't totally, be there. We told invited. Him we were having a gathering at a different location.
We told him we were whoops. Gathering at Universal Studios in California. Bah.
Oh. Bah. Oh no.
Tee.
I'm sorry. I've ruined everything now.
Yep, you ruined the plan. Now I know.
But for reals. If you're coming to MuggleNet Live, let us know. We really want to meet you guys.
Yes.
We want to hang out. We want to drink free butterbeer with you. So yeah, come to MuggleNet Live and hang yeah. out with us. We like friends.
Yes. And as I've stated before, I'll be hanging out predominantly by the food. So if for whatever reason you want to see me, I will be shoving fish and chips and butterbeer into my mouth.
Yum.
As much as I can. As often as I can. Oh, food. I just ate and I'm already thinking about food that I'm going to have next week.
Mm.
But
that's pretty ridiculous.
It's been a while. I just had Cracker Barrel. That does not compete to the Leaky Cauldron.
You guys, there's this episode I always reference of Will and Grace when... whenever Leandra starts talking about where we're going to eat next, because there's this episode where Grace was like, they're all sitting at the table and they're eating dinner. And Grace says, you guys know how I always like to talk about the next thing I'm going to eat while I'm eating. And then she like pulls out this flyer for a, like a noodle restaurant.
It's me. I didn't even know.
And now a message from our sponsors.
Hey you, yes you, the magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint, just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as one dragon dollar a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind-the-scenes features. But wait, there's more! Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billywig's Knees, and how.
And now, for the Phoenix Register.
Yeah!
Alright, now yeah! Michael, say it.
Yeah, say it.
you want me to say it like you?
You have to, yeah.
Yeah, you have to.
And now for the Phoenix Register.
I like that you make me sound so much like more girly than I actually think I sound. Like I listen to myself Well, I don't much listen to myself anymore.
She listens to herself all the time. You heard it here first, listeners.
Whatever. I don't understand those actors who are like, I don't watch movies of myself. I'm like, I would be ecstatic. I'd be like, there's me. That is me right there with Jude Law. I don't know. That's just who we love.
Well, definitely if I was in a movie with Jude Law.
Yeah. Right. I'd want to see every minute of
it. Would watch the crap out of that.
I'd want to sit there with Jude Law watching me and Jude Law in the movie.
Yes.
That sounds like fun.
Yes.
It's the only way to do it.
Of course, Jude Law would probably be like, oh, I have things to do. I'm not staying. No.
I've got important things to attend to.
Because I'm Jude Law.
He would never brush us off like that, guys. Like, he loves us. You don't know.
I've got to go be on. I've got to go be on an episode of Speak Beastie. Right?
Oh God!
Get out of my face, you loser!
I'm really loving this right now.
My British accent Michael needs and so much
Jude
work.
Law impression.
I'm not. Yeah, that is not my official Jude Law impression.
I need to go back to London so that I can get a better handle on this accent because it is suffering.
Go to London, find Jude Law, study him.
Whenever I think of Jude Law, I think for some reason I think of that clip of him when he was on Sesame Street. And he's always like, hi, I'm Jude. And I'm here to tell you about the word cling. I love how he says cling.
It just hurt my neck. My head went back when I was laughing and it hurt my neck.
Maybe you need to cling onto something.
Michael, do you have a Mr. Napkin Head impression?
No, because I haven't seen that movie.
Oh my God, what?
I feel like it's on Netflix. Go watch it.
Is it on Netflix? Oh my God, I will watch it.
I think so. I think.
Like,
I feel like that's
honestly
how Steven
one
and I
of the best
it.
Movies ever.
It's yeah, really. You can watch it any time of year. Don't let it
fool
you.
It's a Nancy Meyers rom-com with Kate Winslet, Jude Law, and Jack Black. And
Cameron Diaz.
Thank you. I was like, I'm forgetting somebody.
I will watch it. I will try and watch it before MuggleNet Live so that I can do my best Mr. Napkin Head for you.
I would love that.
Cling.
God. So maybe I should talk about the news.
The Phoenix Register.
There actually is news.
So on August 11th, the Lumos Twitter account teased that it had quite the surprise in store. And what that ended up being was a campaign to raise money. And the grand prize is for one lucky supporter of Lumos who will win the following. You and a guest can win the chance to join the producer and director for a behind-the-scenes VIP experience to visit the set of the sequel to Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, meet members of the cast and crew of the film, round-trip airfare for two to London, courtesy of American Airlines, three-night stay in a four-star hotel in London, generously supported by Scholastic, and two individual tickets to Warner Brothers Studio Tour London, The Making of Harry Potter, with a tour interactor. There's also some awesome second prize and third prizes. Basically, each entry costs $12. And the ultimate goal of the campaign is to raise $1 million. So even if you donate a set amount, you can get a Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them print by Mina Lima, a black version of the charity's popular Be the Light t-shirt. I think it's something really awesome. If I had $12 to spare, I would enter.
Ariel,
at this current moment in time, I
was going to say, if you do enter, I'm acclaiming that second ticket of yours.
Okay.
Okay, it's mine.
I
want to
come too. I want to come too.
Megan, I'm claiming that second ticket of yours if you win.
Are you going to enter?
Of course I am. Who wants my second ticket? Who wants it? Who wants it?
I do.
Me.
I do.
No, that's not fair.
You can Hunger Games it out, ladies.
Oh, we will. I'm scrappy. Watch out, Megan.
You can have it.
Oh, no. Oh, Megan.
I'm tired.
I feel you. It's okay.
That's pretty cool, though. That's a pretty cool opportunity. I did one of these kinds of things. I entered for Robert Downey Jr. always does these whenever there's a new Marvel movie that Iron Man's in. And
which is all of them.
Which, yes, really. Now, yeah.
I'm not complaining.
No,
I'm
no, it's a good thing. But yeah, no, I did not win, but I did get a giant Age of Ultron poster. Signed with kisses from Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, so my God.
Nice. Yeah. That was nice.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Next time you enter, I want your second ticket to that.
Second ticket to kisses.
Ticket to whatever. Me. I don't care. If it involves Marvel actors, I'm there.
Yeah, basically. They hire the hottest.
Boy, if you've got the real moolah, you can get a signed Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them screenplay. But, I mean, I don't have $2,500 to spare at the moment.
Nope. I feel like I will not ever have that in the future unless I win the lottery, in which case I can just, like, buy my way into the Fantastic Beasts films. So, you know, whatever. But, yeah, I think that's a pretty... It's good. It goes to charity, and when you donate, like you said, certain amounts, you can get really cool things in return, and you are entered for the chance to win the great grand prize.
Yay! So,
yeah. In other news, there is a new gorgeous deluxe edition of the Illustrated Fantastic Beasts. This was just announced.
Whoa!
Pretty recent. What?
I'm just saying it for the first time.
Oh, okay. I'm scared of her, what? This was just announced pretty recently.
Holy poop, look at this.
It's pretty expensive. The deluxe edition retails for about £120, although it's currently discounted on Bloomsbury's website to £108.
Oh, well, there you go. That's pocket.
Yeah, save some money.
Yeah.
Both the deluxe edition and the standard edition will be published on November 7th. So that's something to look forward to. It's really beautiful. But again, if you've got cash, just lay it around. this is one of those things you should just throw that cash at.
Is this is only going to be published in the UK though, huh? This version? Because I know that we're getting an edition of the regular.
Scholastic is publishing an illustrated edition in the U.S.
Yeah,
but it has yet to announce
the bonus
that one
super special one.
Yeah.
So God, that's huge. That looks like the size of the if you've ever seen those art books that they do for Studio Ghibli movies. It looks like that size.
Yeah.
And is that a slipcover? The piece that has the centaur on the cover?
I thought
that's pretty cool.
That was the actual cover. No, that is the slipcover. Okay, yeah, I see what you're talking about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's really cool. I love that picture of the dragon too on the cover.
Yeah. It's really beautiful.
Pretty.
If you want to take a look at it, go to the, I think this is under the Fantastic Beasts. No, it's actually under the Bloomsbury tag on MuggleNet.com.
Nope.
But it's...
What a twist.
But the title is Check Out the Gorgeous Deluxe Edition of the Illustrated Fantastic Beasts, which I said pretty much verbatim. Well, that's it for... Yeah,
it
for... This Phoenix Register. If you want to check out more news, go to MuggleNet.com, Fantastic Beast tag, or in the rare case of the deluxe edition of the Illustrated Fantastic Beasts, Bloomsbury. Y'all want to take it away with the outpost?
I was waiting for it.
Yep, there it is. Here come the owls.
There it is.
It's here just, oh, some like letters dropping from the sky, paper cuts everywhere. This is such a dumb way to deliver mail.
Yes, you and you it. Have to, of course, try to grab one out of the sky rather than picking one off the ground.
It's yeah, like Harry. That thing at Chuck E. Cheese for the tickets.
Dumb 11-year-old kid.
What were you talking about?
Well, yes, you're comparing it to the ticket dispenser.
No, no the ticket. You stand
that
in this
thing that they stick you in. Yeah,
yeah, and it like there's wind and it blows yes. the tickets around, yes, and you gotta
Ellen,
catch them.
Ellen used to do that on her show. She'd put people in like a booth full of like dollar bills. Just turn it on.
Only yeah. Ellen can get away with like that for some reason.
Yeah. Yep.
But we had plenty of we do have a lot of mail kind of falling upon us on this particular episode, which is always lovely to see. The owls are in full. It's kind of like Harry's what was it? That was his birthday in Prisoner of Azkaban when like a whole kind of cacophony of owls showed up with presents yeah. for him. Aww. It's like that. It's that feeling. Because, yeah, you guys had a lot to say about the last episode. And first to start, we got an email from Skylar in response to last episode's podcast question. And Skylar writes, "So I was thinking about the question of the week, and I wonder if Credence is going to end up back with Grindelwald over the course of the war. I feel like it would be interesting if Grindelwald was still feeding him lies like, I'll teach you how to use magic, etc. And Dumbledore is the one that has to come in and talk Credence away from good old Grindy." That's a new way to refer to him, sure. I think it would... Good old Grindy. I think it would be even more interesting if Credence lives through the battle and Dumbledore takes him back to Hogwarts and kind of tutors him on the side. Whoa.
I would love it if Credence survived everything, but... then why don't we hear about him in Harry Potter at all?
Because he has a new name, Filch. What? No, nope, that's dumb theory.
Oh, I don't know.
No, I'm not an obscurus. I'm just a squib.
Now I'm a squib. They thought I Maybe. Was a squib and I wasn't a squib, but I am now.
There's always been something mysterious about Mrs. Norris.
He's Mrs. Norris. I mean,
well, you heard it here, folks.
I'm still inclined to believe that Credence won't survive the series, but because somebody's got to die. This, you know, J.K. Rowling doesn't let people just slip by.
I can't believe we're back to this, like trying to. Guess who's gonna die thing that we had to do back when Harry Potter was still coming out. Like, she's never gonna not do this to me.
And we had a larger... The thing with that, though, is we had a much larger cast of characters to wonder about. And I am assuming that'll happen over the course of the movies, that we will have a larger group of people who are at risk. But I do really like the idea, though, that Dumbledore has something to do with Credence's story, especially with how we discussed the kind of the queer representation of with Credence and Dumbledore and how it would make sense to have the two characters represent that, even if they're not talking necessarily about queer issues explicitly, that they're just, you know, talking to each other.
They just sit down over tea.
Yes, you know. Yes.
So you're gay, right? Me too. How do you... you know.
Sure.
I don't know what follows that in the conversation, but, you know.
The fade out. Movie's over.
Glad we talked. I feel like... it would be a really redeeming arc for Credence if he were to, like, somehow sacrifice himself for, like, a good cause after all of the havoc that he unintentionally wrought in the first movie. Like, if he has to die, I feel like it could be done in a way that kind of makes you feel good-ish.
Aw, the that death made me feel really nice.
Yeah, no, I kind of agree with Skylar in that I do think Credence is going to still be used by Grindelwald because he's so malleable and so broken that he's very I think he could still easily be influenced, and it doesn't make sense for Credence to turn against Grindelwald this early when he is the thing that Grindelwald wants. Like the power of the Obscurus, I think, is really valuable to Grindelwald. Yeah,
but I don't know. Grindelwald did like abandon him.
Yeah, but Grindelwald is so good at charming people, even when he does horrible things to them. So that's kind of the thing. I feel.
I mean, if Dumbledore was able to be manipulated by him, then like this poor little nugget doesn't really stand a chance.
Oh, little nugget.
Credence is a poor little nugget.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Sad chicken nuggets now on sale at Burger King.
I don't know, Ariel. What do you think?
I don't know. I would love for him to have his happily ever after and ride off into the sunset and learn his magic, but I don't think that's gonna happen. And I think we're just going to get more and more attached to him and then just have our hearts ripped right out of our bodies.
And because we as a fandom are aware that we cannot have nice things.
Yeah. Yeah, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. We've learned our lesson from
We Harry have Potter. Learned it, and then we have learned it again.
We've been beaten over the head with it, basically. Like Snape hitting Ron and Harry with that, was it a newspaper or a book? Movie Snape, I should say.
I saw a meme the other day on Tumblr, and it was like, other fandoms, please, we'll do anything for more canon information. Yeah. Harry Potter fandom, we will pay you to stop.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, we had some more thoughts about Credence from our listeners. We had another comment on our website, speakbeastie.com, from Rose Murda, who said, just wanted to add my thoughts. Credence, really can't get a handle on how old he is meant to be. Mid-teens? Doesn't help that Ezra Miller is in his mid-20s, so Credence could be as old as that? My theory is that Credence meets Dumbledore through Newt, and that it is Dumbledore who helps Credence control the Obscurus and also learn to be a proper, fully functioning wizard. I think the hosts were right in that you can't stop being an Obscurial, just learn to manage it, like other human conditions. Which I am also inclined to agree with, because I think that if Credence manages to separate from his Obscurial and survive somehow, I think that would be too convenient and would not really fit with Rowling's themes. You can't just get rid of something that easily.
Yeah.
So, doesn't work that way. Also, that would cheapen Ariana's story, too, if Credence can do it. So, that wouldn't work really well.
Yeah.
But Credence has already shown some semblance of control over the Obscurial, so, or the Obscurus. He's the Obscurial, so.
Yes.
It's hard to keep up.
Yeah, I'll get it right someday. But yeah, that's, I don't know, I just know Dumbledore and Credence are going to interact on a worthwhile level. I'm just not really sure what's going to come of it.
Yeah.
And how does Newt factor into all this other than just being like, Credence, meet Dumbledore, Credence. Okay, bye.
It's like, well, it started off as one film and then three films and then five films because she was like, wait, I can throw Dumbledore and Grindelwald in here.
No.
So that's how Newt factors into things.
I feel like if I know her, she, like, had this all planned from the beginning. Like, at least when she, not maybe when she wrote, like, the initial Fantastic Beasts book, but
Yes, when, the like, intro to the original book does not indicate that she had this planned.
Yeah. No.
But when they approached her about this story, I feel like she, I don't know, she's pretty good at figuring these things out in advance and mm-hmm. weaving things in and dropping hints for things that are going to happen in like 3 installments from now. So I don't know. I have confidence that it's going to fit into the story in a way that like feels natural and not forced, like Newt being like, here, meet this person. but I don't know.
I hope so, because that's something I've been worrying about with this series, because I feel like with what we do know, that basically Warner Brothers gave Rowling the ultimatum when she wouldn't initially agree to do Fantastic Beasts, and they were like, okay, well, we're going to go do it without you because you gave us the rights to. And she was like, no. I have an idea. it's like Professor Trelawney when Umbridge is like, can you predict something?
Yeah.
something talk. Like, so that's because I was really hoping that this series would be way more separated from Potter, and that there would be these, like, you know, name drops and mentions, and maybe we would even see Dumbledore, but that it would not be so, that story just, I was hoping, really wouldn't be as integral, so that Newt's story could stand on its own without depending mm-hmm. on Harry Potter to tell it. Like previous information from Harry Potter. So, and I feel like that's something that Warner Brothers probably wanted more than Rowling did, because I'm sure they wanted everything to tie together a little more.
Yeah.
Cause that can be a big scary thing to, you know, for studios don't really like that idea with sequels and spinoffs of completely abandoning the previous licensed material, like I think she might have wanted to do. But as long as Newt doesn't get shoved in the background and become pointless, that's because, I mean, I'm still irked about the ending of the first movie where Jacob and Queenie become pointless. So I want to make sure that Newt still has his role.
Yeah. I don't know.
Anyway, we have some more mail, I think, Megan.
We do. This comment is also from Ross Murta. She says, oh, and Graves, so many unanswered questions. When did Grindelwald transform into Graves? The timeline makes no sense. How could Grindelwald be in Europe plotting, planning, recruiting, and killing Aurors, perhaps even the real Graves, but also have enough time to learn and be able to convincingly impersonate the top U.S. Auror who is respected and has loyal colleagues and staff? And why did Newt think to do the Revelio spell? Wouldn't it have made more sense for Tina to do that, as she was the one who knew the real Graves and therefore had the correct suspicions about this one?
Uh-huh.
Bless this comment.
You make some good points.
All the good points. Every last one of them.
I mean, yeah.
These are things that were bugging me as well. Mm-hmm. Watching it, I'm just like, there's no time. There's no time. There's just not.
And unless Grindelwald has a rule-breaking time turner.
No.
Well, he could.
I feel like if Grindelwald had a time turner, it would be much more dangerous than the way he is using it now, if he's just using it to study some rando guy. I mean, you know.
I feel like J.K. Rowling is probably kicking herself over the invention of time turners.
Oh, she is.
She had to get rid of them all.
Yep. Yeah. She doesn't like time turners. I know she, like, she's said before on she's mentioned it on Pottermore and on her website that she got rid of them in order because she realized they were such an issue plot wise.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is funny because even that said, the time turners are kept really secure by the ministry. So I She set it up in a way where it would have been hard to access a time turner anyway. But yeah, it's probably best to just not have them around, because then you get things like Cursed Child. So
that never happened.
Nope, Megan has a time turner and she made it never happen.
I erased that.
Was that the time turner noise?
That was Wayne's World, but yeah.
Oh.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Ever?
I think once I had to watch it on like a band bus going to Disney World while I was trying to sleep.
That's a choice to Disney.
I was on like the senior bus with the chaperones that didn't care, and they let us watch like all these raunchy movies. And I was just like, I more really like to sleep.
And as per usual.
Too much, like, hormones and testosterone around me laughing at this movie. Like, anyway.
Wayne's World's the best.
So Grindelwald.
So yeah. Grindelwald. Yeah. And not my tragic high school memories.
Yeah.
Go
ahead, Ariel.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, I feel like there's going to be some half-ass explanation or attempt at it maybe in the next movie, but that's not going to be good enough for me, because if it just doesn't make sense, it just doesn't make sense.
So it'd all be resolved, Rowling, if you would pretty please with the cherry on top write that piece about graves for Pottermore. Please and thank you.
Yes.
I think that would fix a lot, because we just need to know, like, how did Grindelwald target him specifically when he wasn't in the U.S.? Because we know he's not, because at the beginning of the movie, he's not, thanks to the script, we know he's not in the U.S.
Do you think that Graves turns into Grindelwald at some point during the movie? Like,
see, I had wondered that too, but I feel
the screenplay,
like, does the screenplay define that he's Grindelwald.
He's Grindelwald from the start, because it goes from something like, you know, Europe, nighttime, and it's like next day, New York, and it's stated that that's already Grindelwald. Like at that point, like he was him within a matter of hours.
So
actually, yeah. Says that.
I mean, I don't have the screenplay. I just remember someone who had the actual physical copy of the screenplay talking about this with us.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is the movie visually cues you to think he's Grindelwald from the beginning with the haircut.
Yeah.
So right. it's implied that he is. And I feel like the way that he's played, like, Colin Farrell doesn't change anything about his performance with Graves to indicate anything different about him from one scene to another. He's pretty consistent throughout.
Yeah.
So
there's not that whole, like, what they added for Mad-Eye Moody and Barty Crouch Jr. with the, like, tongue licking thing.
Yeah. That hot mess.
Well, I think David Tennant came up with that himself.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying, like, when you're reading the book, you have, like, no clue. And I know for the movie, it had to be different. You had to give some sort of...
movie had to do it differently, because Goblet of Fire was super lazy, and it didn't want to do any of the intricate stuff, so it just cheated. Yeah. Like, that...
Do we even like Harry Potter? Like, all we do is sit here and go, this sucked.
I like Goblet of Fire, the book, which is why I hate Goblet of Fire, the movie. And the thing is...
yeah, that's fair.
I feel like... but Fantastic Beasts kind of comes off more favorably, because at least Fantastic Beasts tries to be a little more... Fantastic Beasts tries to be a little more creative in its use of film to indicate that Graves is Grindelwald. Like, there's multiple different visual clues. And I think, like, as kind of obvious as it is, the shot behind the head with the haircut is well done. Like, it's a neat way to do that. And Goblet of Fire doesn't do things like that. It's literally just okay, do the tongue flick now. Yeah. The stupid audience understands what's going on. So, yeah, I don't like movies that treat their audiences like they're stupid. So, And Goblet of Fire treats the audience like it's stupid, but Fantastic Beasts does not. The unfortunate part is that Fantastic Beasts almost assumes you know too much.
Yeah, well, like we were saying, it assumes that you've read a bunch of articles on Pottermore, yes. for one thing.
Or you've listened to Speak Beastie for the year leading up to it.
and that you maybe should have already read a piece on Grindel or on Graves that doesn't exist. J.K. Rowling. So, yeah. I'd love to know more about... I think it's quite obvious that we'd all like to know more about Graves.
And I do like her point about why Newt was the one to do Revelio, given that, like, Tina is the one that actually knows Graves.
Mm-hmm.
And given that Newt, like, to our knowledge, doesn't have a ton of experience fighting dark wizards. He's like a beast guy.
Yeah, the only reason I could think they did that was just to keep the action centered on Newt as the main character. Yeah, it absolutely does not make any sense at all for him to do what he does. And then, he's just like, oh, also the swooping evil can capture people. That it does lots of things. It's like a Swiss Army knife. So that was, yeah.
A Swiss Army bird.
Swiss Army thing, creature of the night. Yeah, yeah. There needs to be a little more there.
Yes.
Agreed.
And lastly, for the outpost here, we also wanted to give another shout out to Addison, who you may remember sent us the lovely Alfonso Croissant Niffler. Addison has now sent us an Occamy and a Bowtruckle, and we want to thank her for the fantastic art. They are absolutely adorable. You can find her art on our Twitter page on the day this episode is released. So make sure you go and check that out because it's incredibly heartwarming.
Yes.
And she wants us to name the Bowtruckle and the Occamy. I don't know, guys. Should we name these? Should we let our Twitter fans name them? What do you think?
That's tough.
I can't.
We name one, they name the other?
Yes. I think that's a great idea.
So, Hufflepuff fairness.
the Bowtruckle is sad because Alfonso, the Niffler, gets all the fame.
Who's Alfonso? Oh, okay, never mind. Sorry. I'm sorry. I missed that conversation. I'm sorry. I'm used to pastries, okay? It's really confusing.
Also worth noting is that all of the pictures she draws, the creatures are listening to Speak Beastie. And it makes me really happy.
No, I like that the Occamy is saying wuv. It wuv Speak
that
Beastie.
That Occamy is just so cute.
It's precious.
I won't give a little kiss. Sorry.
See, I don't know what to... I feel like the Bowtruckle has to have an especially clever name, since Picket is quite clever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And by the way, so clever that this guy with the bachelor's degree did not get it until somebody was just like, oh my god, he's like Picket because he can pick locks. And I was just like, my mind is blown. So I'm obviously not the person to name the Bowtruckle.
Megan.
The Bowtruckle?
Yeah.
We have to know a little bit more about this Bowtruckle. Like, what are its motivations?
The Bowtruckle is, like, chilling by itself, and it's sad because Alfonso, the Niffler, gets all the fame, and it's listening to the episode of Speak Beastie where we named Alfonso. It's 42, I think. I need to think about this. We're going to name the Bowtruckle by the end of this episode, and we're going to let our Twitter fans name the Akami because it's adorable. Yes.
Or we could each come up with a name and then we could do a Twitter poll for the Bo-Truckle and then they can pick. No? Or is that too much?
No. I just thought, God, I'm so lazy. I go for cheap puns. I wanted in my head, I was just like, let's name the Bo-Truckle David Bowie.
Oh my God.
Yeah, no, that's it.
No poll. Forget it. Screw it. That is the name. It doesn't get much more perfect than that.
Alfonso Croissant, the Niffler, and David Bowie, the Bo-Truckle.
Oh, man. And then somebody's got to name the Akami on Twitter, so good luck filling these shoes.
Yes. We're taking suggestions for this cute little Akami's name.
Man, I chose a really interesting phrase because, you know, the Akami would fill the shoes no matter what size it was.
Ha ha!
Ha 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 ha! Didn't even think about that till after, so.
That was good. Ha ha ha!
Uh-huh. Check me the F out. Y'all are just kidding.
That's gonna have to get bleeped out. That was intense.
I've said a lot of words that are gonna need to be bleeped out, Megan.
Well, I think we've opened up all the mail and the owls mm-hmm. have flown away. All that's left Woo-hoo. Is just torn up letters and bird poop everywhere. Yeah, this mm-hmm.
what a mess.
I'll get out the Mrs. Scour's all-purpose magical mess remover. And Ariel, why don't you take us into main discussion while I clean up?
Okay, thank you. That's so kind of you to clean up.
Bird poop.
No one asked you to do that.
No. I know. I know my responsibilities.
I hope David Bowie helps you out.
Oh, I'm David sure Bowie. He will. He'll unlock the janitor's closet for me.
Bowie's in space. Flight of the Conchords? No.
Does he sing too? Does he sing songs to me? Little David Bowie.
Singing? Oh, obviously. He's a singing Bo-Truckle.
Little David Bowie, the singing Bo-Truckle.
Mm-hmm. That's his occupation.
Just tiny little David Bowie. Dance, magic, dance. Dance,
magic. Oh gosh, this is just so great. I'm so happy. Okay.
Changes.
Let's dance.
How many David Bowie songs do we know?
Not nearly enough.
Yeah, no, just those for me.
Main discussion is all David Bowie songs. So to keep in time with the MuggleNet Live theme, we thought it would be fun, by we I mean I, thought it would be fun to talk about what we think, or what we would even just hope to see if they ever decided to expand the Wizarding World of Harry Potter at Universal Studios Orlando and added Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. So, let's just take a gander at these things that we wrote down here in this doc. She said, sounding as country as she's ever sounded in her whole entire life. Let's just take a gander right here in this doc right here. So
that's right. This is America. America.
America.
So are we paying extra money because now there's another section of Universal Studios we have to go to?
I mean, I don't think so.
Probably.
No. Well,
yeah, Megan gets it. Megan gets how this works.
I feel like they should have just I love Universal, don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I feel like Harry Potter could have been its own part of its own like theme park. Like
pretty much.
It's part of two theme parks and it's great. But I know a lot of people from MuggleNet are like, yeah, I've got 3-day passes to Universal, but I'm really only going to spend time in the Harry Potter parks. And I'm like, yeah.
No, I did that. I mean, the first time I went,
yeah,
I spent 2 whole days just in the Harry Potter sections, and I didn't feel like I'd seen everything.
Yeah.
I know I hadn't. I've barely glimpsed the Three Broomsticks. Like, I've sat in there. Yeah. I've never eaten in there, but I've sat in it. Yeah. So yeah. there's definitely sections I've missed. You know, because until the sequels, since we don't have, we don't have anything from this movie that took place in any of the settings that we know from Harry Potter. Like, if we're going to do 1920s New York, can they, like, they're never going to do this, but could they, like, revamp, for those of you who've been to Universal Studios, you know how they have that, like, that kind of old-timey city area that's, like, right before?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of when I wrote that down, that whole stretch of that park.
Yeah, that's supposed
they
to be,
are,
like...
They're, like, scenes from, or they're, I don't know, like, streets from different classic movies, but...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of, like, there aren't enough of them, or they're not, like, iconic enough that you get it right away.
Yeah.
I feel like you have to walk around and be like, oh, that's from that. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing.
Or maybe I'm just too out of touch.
No. I think that's the thing that's always been, like, that's an issue with Universal versus Disney, is that Universal doesn't have, like, Universal, while they've been around for a very long time, obviously, are not one of unlike Disney, they don't have, like, a theme.
There's no, like, staples.
Yes.
Of their park. Like, Disney, you walk in, you know, the Disney princesses, the Pixar movies, Star Wars. There are things, but Universal, there's so many things. And, you know, even with, like, I love Twister, don't get me wrong, but at a certain point it became outdated because there would be people that hadn't seen the movie, had no idea, like,
those people what it ruined was about. Universal Studios for me because Twister's not there anymore.
I know, I love Twister. But that's the difficulty, is that Disney stuff is always going to be relatively timeless because they own that stuff, but it's also they're doing remakes and they're taking like, you know, Beauty and the Beast is coming out of the vault and the Lion King, you know, like stuff like that. It always comes back around, but it's harder with things from Universal, except for Harry Potter.
Well, the funny thing is the only thing really in the Universal parks that has that same thing that actually belongs to Universal is Jurassic Park. Because Harry Potter is Warner Brothers property, not Universal's.
Yeah.
So.
And now the Marvel section as well. It's Ooh, yeah. Disney property.
That's Disney now.
So. That's messy. That's all a huge big mess. Yeah. So I think like it would. I wouldn't have a problem with them revamping that New York section to become Newt Scamander's New York.
Yeah, because the way you have to walk into Diagon Alley, you go through, like, quote, London, and you go through the bricks, and you walk in, and it's the Wizarding World, you know, it's different, because, like, when you're outside, when you're down by the water, it feels like, you know, oh, I'm in London, and even though the night bus is out there.
Yeah, they've got Leicester Square and King's Cross, like, right next to each other.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, but they give you that kind of sense of, here's the Muggle world, and then here's the Wizarding world. Mm-hmm. And I think that'd be so cool to do. I know they don't have that place of separation in Fantastic Beasts, because the whole point of the movie is the Nomads world and the Wizarding world are clashing and combining when Newt's beasts get out of his Newt case. But I think it would be so cool to have to enter that part of the park by going through 1920s New York, the way you have to go through, like, modern day London. It's just, it'd be such a novel idea, and it's so cool. And there already is that existing part of the park that they could just, and it's right there next to, next to King's Cross. Like,
yeah,
you walk there and you walk. Yeah, it's right there. So if they do this, they have to pay us for coming up with these ideas, obviously.
Yes, have to. Yeah.
They have to.
I think the hard part so far is that, like you said, Ariel, I think a big piece of it is that there isn't a space of separation. The only separation between the Muggle and Wizarding World we do get in the movie is between, like, New York City and Makuza. And I don't think Makuza is, well, it's a great visual in the movie, not really, not that much happens in Makuza that's, like, perhaps theme park worthy. Like, the events in Makuza are not, say, comparable to the things that happen at Gringotts.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I think that would be, like, I'm wondering if they do this at some point, because it seems kind of foolhardy for them not to. If they do it at some point, I'm wondering if they're just going to wait until the series is closer to completion or has at least more movies under its belt.
Yeah.
So did, I would think so. Did I ruin it? We don't have a park anymore?
I feel like there's enough in this movie that you could do a lot with a theme park, but I think it would be, like, immeasurably cooler if we had all five movies. I mean, just this next one's going to be in, like, three different cities. Like, there's going to be a lot going on.
Yeah, I think the things that, and we'll have to go through some of these ideas that you guys were talking about, but I think some of these things contribute to a park that ends up being more, not so much a full day park as just like a stopover park on your way to other things, unfortunately. Because it just doesn't have enough yet. It's weird to think that Fantastic Beasts doesn't have enough, but it doesn't.
But we could do like a Wizarding World, and that could be like a, we could redo all of the Universal parks, and we could add like a Fantastic Beast section, and
is
we
Universal could have a cursed Studios child
area
be,
where we just put people and lock the door. And
is Universal Studios just going to become Harry Potter and Jurassic Park, and that's all it's going to be?
Yes, and that's okay.
I mean, there's Seuss Landing, which is so adorable. I love that part of the park.
Oh, they were building Kong something.
King Kong's open.
Yeah, I rode that. Yeah. That was interesting. Was it good? It was okay. It wasn't, I don't know. I feel like Universal relies a lot on the like 3D glasses, like riding in a fake car, looking at a screen type kind, like I don't, like Spider-Man and Transformers, like they do that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Which there's nothing wrong with it. It just,
it tends to be you get the gist of the experience after a while.
Yeah, I thought it would be different, and it wasn't. So,
Well, what rides would we have in this section?
Well, Megan has a lot of ideas about what Megan's rides
built
we would
this
have
park
this
already. She has a scale model on her desk right now.
Yeah,
I do. It's really good.
She's put little, like, paper figures of me and Ariel and her in the park already.
Mm-hmm.
For scale.
Very crafty.
Yes.
And Michael is, like, the best person to ride any ride with ever. In case anyone needed to know.
I'm excited.
Ariel watched all of my Spider-Man dreams come true on that Spider-Man ride.
Oh my god, the Spider-Man ride is amazing.
But anyway, this is not a Spider-Man podcast. Tell us your ideas, Megan.
It could be.
So I'm thinking Universal just built this new Jimmy Fallon, like, New York Adventure roller coaster.
So we take that out.
I don't know if it's open yet. I don't know what it's like, but just take out Jimmy Fallon and put in Newt Scamander. And you'd just be zipping around New York in a roller coaster, and he'd be up there like, oh my goodness, look at me, I'm adorable. And then you would zoom around.
What was
around
that accent for him?
Oh my goodness.
I don't know. I told you my British accent really needs some work. and there would be like beasts that pop out. It would be really cool.
Yeah, I feel like if there was a narrative ride, that would almost certainly be it. Like it would have to be a beast chase. It would almost I have the feeling though, just like
the Forbidden Journey.
Yes, I was just gonna say, just like Ariel was saying, how all of the rides and the vehicles are very similar. I think this will end up being like, if they did a ride like that, it would end up being very similar to Forbidden Journey, with the kind of, because listeners, for those of you who haven't ridden it yet, Forbidden Journey has a bit of a weird, it has a narrative. Most people don't pay attention to it because they're just too excited, but there is actually like a really real stretch of a storyline going on where you're like,
it's very odd. Yes, no one really believes
you're,
it.
You're a group of muggles riding on a magic bench that Harry and Ron have enchanted. And you're,
and when the best part is when you're on the ride, you're just like, yeah, great.
I sure am.
Sure, I'm on a magic floating bench. And yeah, you run into like everybody on the ride, and you fall down like a giant hole in the Quidditch stadium, and you end up in the Chamber of Secrets, and there's Dementors everywhere. There's some crazy ish going on that ride. But I feel like in a way, this plot from Fantastic Beasts would loan itself better to a narrative ride. Because it would be so easy to have the, you know, you kind of going along with all these four characters trying to stay out of the way of the creatures and kind of encountering them constantly. And, and then the whole fight at the end with Grindelwald and Credence and all of that, that could definitely be pretty cool. Because the fight with, I have to say, the Gringotts ride is a little meh as far as thrills are concerned, but honestly, every time Voldemort looks you in the eyes on that ride, that is some creepy.
That's a little scary.
I hate it. I'm like, stop. It
really does feel like him and Bellatrix are looking right at you. It's very unnerving. Yeah. So, yeah. Imagine Johnny Depp looking at you like that.
Nope. I'm okay with that in my life. Ooh.
And then Johnny Depp's in both Florida parks.
It's fine. Yeah. It's all right.
He got everything he wanted.
Ugh. So Megan, what other rides were you thinking?
So, I don't know how this would work, but I feel like one of those escape rooms. It's not a ride; it's just a thing that people do.
Yeah,
but it's like a,
it's cool.
It's a magical puzzle, and you have to like help beasts do stuff by escaping the room.
Man, yeah. Escape rooms and theme parks, that'd be something else.
That would.
That's not a thing yet. I feel like
you book like an hour and a half to be in the escape room. I feel like that would work. I don't know. I feel like theme parks should start doing that.
That could be a thing.
Yeah, and it give you time to cool off.
Right.
Ooh.
And then I was thinking, you know, the Buzz Lightyear ride at Magic Kingdom where you shoot lasers.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like something like that would be cool, where you're like aiming spells to try to catch the Niffler, or obviously you wouldn't be hurting the Niffler, you would just be like, hey, you, calm down, here's a snack, you know.
Well, there's kind of an alternative version of that ride in Disney World in Japan. There's a Monsters, Inc. ride where the plot is like it's kind of a sequel to the movie where Boo has come back to Monstropolis and they're having their annual like citywide hide and seek game where like all the lights in the city go off and your car has a flashlight on it, and the ride is a dark ride, and what you do is you flash your lights at different sections of the ride and it activates certain monsters in sections of the ride and you get points for it.
So cool.
So you could do it that way. You could, if you want to do the less harmful thing or something like that.
Yeah. Let's do it that way.
You could Lumos with your light, shine the light on some beasts in the room or something like that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I like that better.
What are we sitting in? It's not a magical bench, is it?
Yes, it is a park bench that has been enchanted.
And you have to wear Jacob's helmet.
Yes.
I feel like, I guess we're not in the case if we're trying to capture the beasts.
No.
Riding around in an old 1920s car.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. There were not enough 1920s cars in that movie.
That's no. true.
Yes.
Ariel, you have some ideas too.
Not as good as yours.
Ride a boat with Newt.
Yeah, you know. That big fun adventure.
I would absolutely ride that. I'm not I'm not even kidding. It sounds
you
great.
You can reenact Titanic, the whole, you know, my heart will go on scene.
See, that's
oh my
this,
God, yes.
This is the frustrating thing about the way I guess the IP works with Universal Studios and Harry Potter is from what I understand, the characters themselves are not permitted to appear in costume form. So, like, you would, like, the holograms is kind of the limit. So, seeing the holograms of Daniel Radcliffe or Emma Watson or Rupert Grint as those characters, that's as far as they can go. They can't have people dressed as Harry, Ron, and Hermione, and ostensibly as Newt. Like, they can have Celestina Warbeck, and I'm assuming that's because she's never depicted anywhere else.
Yeah.
But I think that was something that maybe Warner Brothers or even Rowling stipulated. So we can.
Warner Brothers doesn't want us to have nice things.
No, they don't. I mean, I'm not saying I don't want to ride a boat with Newt. I'd love to ride a boat.
I do want to ride a boat with Newt, in fact.
Would it be like the. I'm picturing the storybook canal boats from Disney. Like, just tiny little boats. I know you're thinking of the big boat, but I'm thinking of tiny little boats.
Even better. My other idea was going inside Newt's case, like how they had Honey, I Shrunk the Kids at Disney. I don't know if y'all ever got to experience that, but it was really cool.
That was at MGM. I mean, whatever it's called.
Hollywood Studios now. Yeah.
It will always be MGM to me.
Back in the day when I was there, it was MGM.
Back in the day before MGM went horribly bankrupt.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, no, I think that was the other obvious separation that I didn't think of. But yeah, that's almost a given. You kind of have to do something like this. How would they do the entrance? Like, how would that work?
I don't know. I'm not coming up with that.
So I was just curious because they definitely had interesting ways of getting around those issues with Diagon Alley's entrance and the platform 9 3/4 entrance. I don't want to spoil them for the listeners who are about to experience it, but they had to do some. They had to be extra creative to get around those problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't imagine how you would get around something like this because they can't have something where it would be so limited that only one person could enter at a time to such a large attraction. But I want it.
Right.
I want something too. Like I want the beasts to be like the. You know how they have the Velociraptor show at Jurassic Park?
Yeah.
I want that.
Oh, yeah.
I want that, but with the beasts. So you can take pictures with the beasts and interact with them.
I'd like awesome. It.
Make it happen. I see, too, there's like lots of merchandise ideas on here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Shop full of the beasts. Because they have like... When you go to the Wizarding World, they have like Fox and Fang and Hedwig. And what they could do is the Niffler and Akami and Moon Calves and all Sasquatch, all the animals.
I want a Moon Calf stuffy really badly.
Oh my God, me too.
So cute.
That would be adorable.
Just so cute.
I think this is the part where why I feel like this is all inevitable at some point is that. Currently, the Wizarding World doesn't have any Fantastic Beasts merchandise. And it seems really foolhardy to not have that. And I'm sure they can't because they understand that it wouldn't make sense to put it in the wizarding world, but it like it just seems like too good of an opportunity to miss. To not do it, because there are so many possibilities with what you could sell with this kind of stuff. And it would be nice, like, I like your idea of having like a store where you can buy the beasts, because they have the magical menagerie in Diagon Alley, and it sucks.
I like it.
It's like, well, it's kind of,
I wasn't gonna go that far.
Well, it's kind of empty. Like, it doesn't, it doesn't really serve much of a purpose. So
only has a few animals, really.
Yeah,
I don't know. Have I was so excited many more. About it when I was there, but I was also just overwhelmingly excited about everything.
True,
but yeah, no, I think that would it just I because I remember this when I went last time because Jurassic World had just come out and I was stunned because there was like barely any fanfare for it in the park and it had just come out and I came and like I went and I Catherine and I were laughing because I was pointing at all of the like really cheap merchandise they had, like they had like a cup that had the logo on it and I was just like some executive somewhere was like, see this cup, slap that logo on there, sell that ish for like $20. Like, fine.
And then I walk in and I'm like, oh, that's so cool. I need that cup.
I'm sure lots of people bought that cup. I did not buy that cup because I was just like, how dare you, Universal Studios? You can do better than that. Gosh. I mean, it's almost like I'm even wondering now, too, saying that, because I also feel like it's inevitable that Jurassic Park will be revamped for Jurassic World at some point because Jurassic Park is super out of date now. I wonder if there's maybe even plans or discussions about updating these two simultaneously. Doing some big overhauls. If there's not Universal, you should be doing that because these ideas are amazing.
Yeah. Did we talk about these like food ideas yet?
No.
You know I'm going to talk about the food.
Do it.
That's why I put this stuff in here.
What are we eating?
Obviously, there has to be Jacob's Bakery. I mean,
yum.
Can you imagine? Because I love going in and getting all the sweets, but then you can go in and you get like a donut shaped like a moon calf. Like, what? That would be amazing.
And that would be the kind of place where you'd have like a line wrapped around the building.
Oh,
and, like,
yeah.
People would be buying like dozens of that stuff to like shove in their suitcases and take back with them.
Exactly.
That'd be awesome.
Another possible idea, hot dog stand for Tina, because you know.
With mustard.
Our girl, yes. Man, I'm so hungry. I just started thinking about it. I was like, I want a hot dog and I want a donut. But, you know, all in good time. But Giggle Water, I'd be really interested to see how that would taste.
Ooh.
If they did that.
Will they have the speakeasy as like a
like
a little bar?
They better.
Area?
I feel like that would be their restaurant, because you know how there's the Leaky Cauldron and the Three Broomsticks in each respective park? Like, that would be the restaurant. Well, other than the bakery.
Yes,
but that'd kind of be like...
They do have the door, don't they?
I think so.
Don't
I think
they
I've seen
the
pictures
door,
of it.
They like stuck. They like tucked it somewhere.
Yeah.
What door are you talking about, Megan?
The door that is the front of the speakeasy that has like the pictures on it. They put one in Universal.
That's weird.
But it's like not in the same. It's not with the other Wizarding World stuff.
Oh, that's
where
weird.
Is it?
In one of the alleys of the New York area of Universal, you'll see a poster for the Blind Pig.
Oh, so they did. They did hint at it.
Yeah. So
this all definitely, I feel like, has to be somewhere that's next to, and not within the current Harry Potter area, because I don't think they've really built that in a way that it can be expanded on much at this point.
No, it's located between Transformers and Revenge of the Mummy.
Yeah, those aren't going anywhere anytime soon.
So that's it for main discussion. Megan, do you want to take it away with the time turner?
Yes, I do.
Awesome.
So this week for the time turner, I have a historical icon that is a little bit, I don't know what to say. Like, she's a little bit not PG. And
yay, that's how we
like it. Love her for it. But just a warning to any of you who are listening with small children. I'm not going to say anything weird, but, like, you know, that's what this is about. So this week we're going to talk about Josephine Baker.
Yeah, we are.
Who is an activist and awesome lady from the early 1900s. She lived from, I think, let me find the exact date. I didn't write it down.
She lived from 1906 to 1975.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
She was, for those of you who don't know, an entertainer, activist, and French resistance agent. And before I get into this, I would like to give a shout out to Amy, my roommate, who helped me come up with this topic and also helped me with the French pronunciations involved in this segment, which I still may very well botch.
but at least you tried.
I did try. So Josephine, her career was centered primarily in Europe, mostly in her adopted France, because she was actually born in the United States. During her early career, she was renowned as a dancer and was among the most celebrated performers to headline the Folies Bergère, which is in Paris, and that's probably not how you say it.
Folies Bergère?
Yes, that sounds better.
Yeah, I can fake my way through a French accent.
There you go. I'm always just like, ugh, I'm a big clunky American and I can't do it. her performance in the Un Vent de Folie in 1927 caused a sensation in Paris, which I think means a force of nature. Her costume consisting of only a girdle of bananas, which is incredible, became her most iconic image and a symbol of the jazz age in the 1920s.
She's my new favorite.
She was awesome. But like I said, I mean, she was sort of an exotic dancer, so that's why I kind of wanted to put a disclaimer on this. But she was an exotic dancer in the 1920s. Like, that's incredibly badass. I don't know.
I feel like her girdle of bananas would go well with, like, Lady Gaga's meat dress.
Right. Like, she was the Lady Gaga of Newt's era. She was a civil rights activist, and she actually refused to perform for segregated audiences in the United States.
Yeah.
And she was known to, like, kind of communicate with Martin Luther King Jr. and help him out with a couple of causes. She was married 4 times.
Nice. 'Cause,
you know.
Why stop at one?
Right. If you're not satisfied, just keep it moving. Here's the main reason why I wanted to talk about her. Throughout her life, Josephine Baker adored and was constantly surrounded by menageries of animals. She had learned early in her poor childhood to be mistrustful of people and began her lifelong habit of showering affection on animals by befriending and sharing her food with Three Legs, the crippled dog of her unkind employer. Like, come on. And she also had a pet cheetah named Chiquita.
What? This is amazing.
And she had an ostrich, which would, like, pull her carriage sometimes, which is probably animal abuse, but we don't, you know, whatever, it's fine.
The dog's name was Three Legs?
Yeah. Oh. This person had a three-legged dog, and they named it Three Legs. She became friends with him and shared her food with him.
Good.
So that reminded me a lot of Newt. Like, she clearly has a love of animals. Aww. Whether or not it's misguided sometimes, you probably shouldn't make an ostrich pull your carriage, but let's assume they had an agreement.
Well, maybe you also shouldn't make a firebird make New York forget everything. Huh,
right.
Newt? Huh?
Yeah.
Huh? Huh?
So the moral of the story here is that
Thunderbird.
She's definitely...
Did I say Firebird? Thunderbird. Excuse me.
I knew
me.
What you meant.
You it's knew. All good.
Moral of the story is that she's definitely a witch, and with this love of animals that she has, and just being around the same places and times as Newt, I feel like they're probably pals, and she probably shows up to help him out.
I would love if he met Josephine Baker.
Oh my god, that would be amazing.
I'm down with this. I can get
And I just wanted to throw some notable quotes in there so that you guys will come to love her as much as I suddenly have. One of the things she said, which is my favorite thing ever, is, "I wasn't really naked. I simply didn't have any clothes on."
True.
I like that.
That's amazing.
She also says, "All my life I have maintained that the people of the world can learn to live together in peace if they are not brought up in prejudice." And
that is correct.
"God dislikes evil, yeah, and no happiness can be built on hate. Love one another as brothers."
Aww.
That's just very Newt to me. Like, yeah. I don't know, yeah. I feel like they're two peas in a pod here.
Yeah.
I'm wonder down if with Newt this. Likes bananas.
I'm actually sure using these like kind of referencing these historical figures the way we have in past episodes too. I'm surprised that Rowling hasn't really. She tends to do that more in her extended canon than she does in her main stories, with referencing how wizards were involved in history.
Yeah.
So I would be really interested to see if she would actually play with this kind of thing and maybe introduce it. Like, the thing is, this is really more of a Doctor Who thing.
Yeah.
I think that's potentially where we get this idea from.
Well, I mean, Nicholas Flamel was a real figure. She just kind of tweaked his story a bit.
Well, and even as heavily used as he is in Sorcerer's Stone, he's never actually seen.
Yeah, true.
She doesn't really do this. So I'm wondering if she would change Fantastic Beasts to do something like this.
I don't know. I think that'd be really cool, just given how much more intertwined Newt's story has been with the Muggle world than Harry's was.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows?
Well, that's because I remember being like a little confused when she actually went ahead and used the Shaw family for that segment of the plot, because I was kind of curious if the Shaws, when it was announced, I was like, were the Shaws real people? And of course they weren't. And I was kind of hoping that she might play with that if they had that actually used real, you know, figures from history. Because when she does that in her extended canon, it's really fun. And it's very clever how she does that. But I don't think she's playing a lot with that here. I wish she would, though.
Yeah.
Because she's good at it.
Yay.
Yeah. Thank you, Josephine Baker.
I'm going to turn it on back to the 21st century here, reluctantly.
Oh, we're back.
We're back. Here we are.
Okay, well, I'm opening up the case. We're going down in here.
We have no idea what's in it.
Well, I don't see.
We do this every single time.
Well, I don't see. You know, this is unusual because this time Newt has not left a beast for us necessarily to look at. He's just on his workbench down here. He's left his notebook, his notes, and written here he has a story for you guys. I think here. So I'm gonna share this story with you, listeners. As I go along with the story, you might recognize it if your childhood was especially messed up.
Okay.
Okay, I'm really excited to hear what this is because I don't know.
this particular telling of this story is a slightly modified version of the one written by Joanna Galdon. Yeah, you'll just see as we go along. And Aaron, I hope you're listening, because you will definitely enjoy this. So the only information I can give you is that this story takes place in the Appalachian Mountains on the eastern side of the U.S. that runs from the bottom half tip of New York to Georgia. So that's kind of the location. And it is fall. That is the time of the year we're in. A long time ago, an old man lived by himself in the deep woods. The old man had three dogs, and one day the man decided to go hunting to catch something for his supper. "Here," he shouted to his dogs, and they came bounding off the porch, eager for a chase. After many hours of hunting, the wind began to blow hard from the valley. "It'll be dark soon," the old man said, "and all we've caught is this skinny rabbit." He headed home, afraid he might go to bed hungry that night. The old man cooked and ate the rabbit and gave the bones to the dogs. Then he leaned back in his chair and watched the moon as it rose up big and full. The wind whistled around the cabin. Just as the old man was about to doze off, a most curious creature crept through a crack between the logs and the wall. It had a big, long, furry tail. As soon as the old man saw the varmint, he reached for his hatchet, and with one lick, he cut its tail off. Before the man could raise his hatchet a second time, the creature slipped out through the crack and ran away. The old man was still hungry, so he took the big, long tail, cooked it, and ate it. After that, he stuffed up the crack in the wall and went to bed. His stomach was full, and he felt so warm and snug that before he knew it, he was asleep. The old man hadn't been asleep very long when he woke up. Something was climbing up the side of his cabin. It sounded like a cat.
Nope.
"Who's that?" the old man asked. He lay still and listened, and after a while he heard a voice say,
"Tailypoo, Tailypoo, all I want is my Tailypoo."
The scratching went on and on, and the old man began to shiver and shake. Then he remembered his dogs. He went to the door and called, "Here!" The dogs came piling out from under the porch, and with their noses to the ground, they chased that thing deep into the woods. The old man pulled his covers tightly around him and went back to sleep. But in the middle of the night, he woke up again. Now he heard something trying to get in right above the cabin door.
"Who's that?" he called. "What do you want at this time of night when all the good folks should be in bed?"
He listened, and he could hear it going. Then he heard the voice say,
"Tailypoo, Tailypoo, I'm coming to get my Tailypoo."
The old man was so scared he couldn't stand up, so he called his dogs from his bed, and those dogs came bursting around the corner of the cabin. They caught up with that wild thing at the gate and tore the whole fence down trying to get at it. Then they chased it into the swamp. At last, all was quiet again, and with a weary sigh, the old man went back to sleep. But toward morning, something down in the swamp woke up the old man. First, he thought it was the wind blowing louder than usual. But when he listened again, he heard that voice crying,
"You know, and I know, all I want is my Tailypoo."
The old man called his dogs, "Here!" But this time the dogs didn't come. The old man ran outside into the moonlight and called again, "Here, dogs, here!" But there was no trace of them. There was just the sound of the wind blowing around the torn down fence. Sadly, the man went back inside the cabin and shut and barred the door. Then he went back to bed. And just before daylight, the old man opened his eyes, the way people do when they feel there's someone else in the room. Something was stirring among the pots and pans. Then something that sounded just like a cat began climbing up the covers at the foot of the bed. The man listened, and he heard it. He looked over the foot of his bed and saw two pointed ears. Then he saw two big, round, fiery eyes staring at him. The man wanted to call for help, but he was too scared. The thing kept creeping up until it was right next to the old man. Then it said in a low voice,
"You know, and I know, that I'm here to get my tailypo."
The man sat up and pulled the covers over his head. All at once, he got his voice and said,
"I haven't got your tailypo."
"Yes, you have," said the thing. "Yes, you have."
And it jumped on top of the man and scratched everything to pieces. Now there's nothing left of the old man's cabin in the deep woods except the chimney. But folks who live in the valley say that when the moon shines and the wind blows, you can hear a voice say,
"Tailypo, tailypo, now I've got my tailypo."
The end.
The f*** is your problem, Michael?
I, like, sort of want you to read me a bedtime story, and I sort of want you to never talk to me again. I don't know. It's a really weird combo.
Believe it or not, listeners, what I just read you is a children's picture book called The Tailypo.
Apparently, tailypo is a frightening, ravenous, cat-like creature of North American folklore.
Yes.
The key word there being folklore, thankfully.
Or is it? Yes, the all I could find on information on the tailypo, which in a way makes it even creepier, is that its likely origins are amongst slave tales, slave folk tales, from probably around the 1700s-1800s in the Appalachian Mountains. That's pretty much all is really known about it. The tailypo, as described in the story, just like Megan said, it's kind of a cat-like thing with two little tufty ears, yellow or red eyes, depending on the version you're hearing, and a big, giant, bushy tail that's been chopped off. Oh, and it has very sharp, long claws.
And it can speak like a man. And it demands the return of its tail.
Mm-hmm.
It's tailypo.
That's just fine, because that's not at all far from where I live. So, great.
Yes, this is actually, I was surprised to discover that many, many a person our age had been exposed to the story of the tailypo in their youth. Usually by a particularly sadistic teacher or librarian.
Yeah.
Potentially, if you look at
images of this thing, it's horrific. I mean,
yep.
What on earth?
And there are more explicit versions of the tale that say what the tailypo did to the man. There are also very boring children's versions of the tale where the tailypo gets its like dues in the end, and it's usually like a little boy or girl who it's after, and the little boy just or girl scares it away.
But also, why'd this dude cut off the tail and like eat it? Like, that's weird.
Yeah.
Hey, when you're hungry, you're hungry. Having just read the story of the Donner Party, you do desperate things when times get bad.
I don't know.
Not only did they eat each other when they had to, but they also ate, leather, shoelaces, rugs.
I would do that before I... Yeah, that's fine.
So, yeah, that's our creature for today. I meant to... I'm assuming Newt only has these writings about the tailypo because he has no interest in actually acquiring one for his collection.
No.
No.
So I would say, though, the tailypo, if you leave it alone, isn't necessarily harmful. It only comes after you if you take something that belongs to it.
If you chop off its tail and eat it, which I have to admit would make me mad too. Like.
So, yeah, that I don't think we'll be seeing the tailypo.
Oh, please, no.
But I
you
do
know,
feel like-
and I know, I don't want to see that taily.
Bravo. That was good.
That was, yeah, that was, but I feel like the Taily Po kind of, I think the reason I wanted to bring it up here is not only because Aaron would be very proud of me for using
he would.
The Taily Po, but when I was surprised he hadn't used it already, but also because I feel like the Taily Po kind of is in line with Rowling's kind of more nasty, darker sense of humor. That these when you read about kind of the things that some of the beasts have done to wizards, the Taily Po seems kind of pale in comparison. But it seems to live in that same kind of sadistic, this horrible thing exists purely to be horrible.
Yay.
It has no other purpose. She seems to like stuff like that. So yeah, Rowling, if you're listening, I look forward to your rewrite of the Taily Po someday. And that's, I think that's enough for our trip to the nuke case on this episode. So,
I concur.
Just be glad he didn't have an actual example for us in the case today.
Ugh.
Ugh. And with that, we wrap up this episode with our podcast question, which in this case relates to our discussion about building a Fantastic Beasts section for the Wizarding World of Harry Potter. Our question is, if they added a Fantastic Beasts portion to the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, what would you like to see? I'm sure you listeners have plenty of ideas. We'd love to hear from you about that or anything on this episode or anything about Fantastic Beasts in general. So drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets, or email us, speakbeastie@gmail.com. And we would also love to get a review from you on iTunes, and we appreciate your constructive, kind criticism for Speak
yes.
Beastie.
You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram @speakbeastie, on Facebook @facebook.com/speakbeastie, on Tumblr @speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com, and if you like us a lot, you can support the show on Patreon @patreon.com/speakbeastie. Also, check out our website @speakbeastie.com. And don't forget, if you want to join us at MuggleNet Live, be sure to visit MuggleNetLive.com for your tickets and meet up with us on September 2nd at the Orlando Eye.
I'm Ariel.
I'm Megan.
And I'm Michael.
Case closed.